being in the industry in the 90s. It was fucking cool. It was really, everybody wanted to be a barber or everybody wanted to be a hairdresser. You know, it's the best industry in the world.
Josh LaMonica turned up around 2015. He gave his time. Would Josh do that today? Yeah, I still think he would. Mm. He would be looking at the brand awareness.
I meet a lot of young guys that are doing really cool content, really nice stuff, but they're not managing to turn that into something.
And that's exactly the thing, isn't
it? Yeah.
You're getting
How do you
huge...
monetize?
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. I'm Anthony Laban and welcome back to the Noble Barber Podcast. This is part two. I'm here with Dom Lehane, How to Cut It, and Phil Collins, Hair Uncut. Good first chat, boys. I like that, even though you had me being much more interviewed than I'm used to.
Yeah, come on.
Maybe we can talk. Maybe we can not all aim it at me this time. Anyway, we've been chatting, and I think how much do you give of yourself for free? How do we monetize, and should we be paid? Are we asked to do too many things for free? Obviously, I'm going to bracket that in the fact that you guys have obviously come along here today without a fee, and I appreciate that. What do you feel? How are we feeling about our industry? We're doing lots of bits now that we're encouraged to do stuff for free. Is everyone doing it for free?
To be honest, I think it's a really good topic because I think it came up recently because there was Fashion Week and whether or not barbers and hairstylists should be paid a fee to do that. And I have to be honest, I do a lot of stuff for free, okay, much to my wife's kind of displeasure. And, you know, I think it's about giving opportunity and also looking at the bigger picture. So you might do something for free because you're meeting new people, it's connections, it might be with a brand. I think with things like a barber working at Fashion Week as an example, I think it should be for free. I think because, you know, you're then opening up yourself to new opportunities that you may not have always, you know, you might have the opportunity to get. I think with Hair Uncut, you know, it's a difficult one because my wife would be like, you need to monetize it because it's almost like this really cool hobby to have 17,000 people. There's an element of truth in that, but I think if you're going to monetize something like a closed group, a closed community, you've got to add value. You've got to have so much content and so much support in to be able to do that. And I think it's about people respecting people and having a voice in the industry. You know, would people complain if something like what we do is monetized? You know what? I don't think they would. And I think people can see through the bullshit, I think. And I think people, when you're supporting people and you've supported people and you are a voice in the industry, which to a certain extent, I like to think I am a small proportion. I think if you stand up and you tell the truth and you support people and you really champion the industry, I don't think people would mind. No.
Where are you on this?
Dom.
Look, I'm certainly with Phil. I think that there's a big part you've got to give your time. Certainly if you're making your way in the industry, and I'll give an example of this. So we, again, going back to Open Chair Night. So when we launched Open Chair Night, I was the founder of Hair Club Live. We'd done Open Chair Night and basically people, hairdressers, barbers could have 10 minutes in the chair to showcase their talent. That was kind of what they'd done. And the reason I mention that is Josh LaMonica turned up with his Menspire team. And this is quite early days, Menspire team, because we were doing Open Chair Night around 2015. Mm-hmm. So it was early time. He gave his time. Would Josh do that today? Yeah, I still think he would. Mm-hmm. I still think he would because he would be looking at the brand awareness. So actually, what is the reason of you doing stuff for free? And that's how I would be looking at it. I'd be like, I've come here. Of course, I don't want to be paid. We're just here. One, I'd like to have a good chat and a debate with people that I respect. Mm. But equally, it gives me a bit more exposure. It keeps me out there. And therefore, I look at it. But then I'll get other things where I'll be asked to host an awards, or I'll host an event, or I will do work for a brand.
Mm.
And I will look at that and think, okay, is that awards or that brand making money?
Mm.
And probably they'll say yes. Therefore, I want to be paid because I'm giving my skill and time. If I'm honing my craft and I'm starting out and I'm thinking, I'm just keen. And I did in my very early days.
Mm.
But I've done the hard footwork now. I mean, I could trace this back 20 years. You know, this isn't a 2-year journey or 3-year journey. I mean, I've known Phil for a long time because of that journey that we've all been on.
Mm.
So I've earned my career currency. But there are times. So I will be hosting an event coming up very soon. I'm giving my time, but I'll trade off saying, you know, okay, I'm going to do this. Well, we'll give you some sponsorship for your brand. So, but there will have to be something there for me.
Mm.
But I think if you're starting out and you're fresh, you've got to do the circuit. And you've got to give yourself. And there will be things like the Barber Bash. And, you know, I'd be interested. I'm pretty sure none of them would be paid as a whole, would they?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
No.
And Josh and Kevin were on stage together yesterday, and Josh's team was there and Kevin's team was there. You know, and exactly that. It was a real showcase for the community. And
yeah, you're getting out, you're showcasing your work. But there's a reason behind it. So I would ask myself, if I'm going to give time, because getting a model and I'm going to be traveling, I'm going to have to put in a huge amount of time, why am I doing this?
Mm.
And why am I going to give myself for free for doing this? I believe you should have to do it.
But at some point, I mean, you know, there seems to be more and more things to do free, you know. Mm. I mean as a working lad, if I'm cutting hair, I know I'm earning. Mm. But then if I'm creating some images, I'm not.
Mm.
You know, I'm shelling out for that. If I'm filling out competition entrances, that's time that I'm not making money from. Yeah, the amount of guys that are showing haircuts, are giving business advice online.
Yeah.
At what point, there is a point where you kind of go, you know what, I'm not a novice here now. Mm. I know what I'm doing. I'm now bringing skill.
Mm.
How do you move that over to monetizing? You know, essentially the kind of move away from mates, rates and freebies and doing it as a proper part of your business. I meet a lot of young guys that are doing really cool content, really nice stuff, but they're not managing to turn that into something.
And that's exactly the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're getting
huge
traction by being consistent,
mm-hmm.
by being real, by being talented, by offering something a little bit unique, and by working hard.
Mm.
Hard work
is
the key to it all. There's not Instagram, TikTok, YouTube is not suddenly you're huge on there that you're going to earn a lot of money.
No,
I believe
that
a lot of them are not earning that much money.
No, and also I think, you know, in the world of social media that we live in, there's a fine line between someone being authentic and honest and then controversial and a little bit bizarre. And as we were saying in the break, you know, I think that, you know, if somebody has a huge following on their Instagram, for example, and a brand then approaches that individual to work with them to promote their brand, da 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 da, is that really going to make a huge difference to that brand? If you pick an industry person who's got a huge following and a brand decides to work with them, is that then going to increase the sales of that brand on a ground level question? I'm not so sure that's there anymore. I think, as you were saying in the break, Dom, you know, you might have a micro influencer, or you might have someone that's got 1,000 followers, but their content is amazing. They're doing these great fades. They're doing this great. They're talking about the barbering industry. Do you need to have a huge amount of followers? Do you now?
No, because I think with Reels, I mean, they will, and Instagram and TikTok, they will serve out what they feel is right. So it's a bit like if I just create this video and we send it out and it reaches everybody, if you're not industry related or not, it just everybody. The vast majority of people are just going to thumb roll it.
Yeah.
Just go for it.
Yeah.
But actually, I'd rather have 10 people that are really connected that maybe I could sell a product to, or a interview to, or who are because they're genuinely interested. Yeah. So it's a bit like flyering everywhere, isn't it? I'm going to fly a flyer, flyer.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of all those thousands, you might get two people.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to put on club nights.
Yeah.
And I used to go off and flyer in bars and shops. And I was just thinking, you know, the vast majority, but more out there, the better. But you know that I would rather just gone in a room with one, you know, 10 clubbers in there and just gave them that. Because I probably would have got more from it. But I think in terms of serving out, I think when it comes back to monetizing, we shouldn't just be looking at relying on brands.
No.
Why are we just so reliant on brands? Be creative yourself. Think about how can I make money by doing something that offers value and an experience and a resource for people. And that's it. And don't try and follow. So actually, how pioneering are you? I don't see too many pioneering people now. Really?
No.
You know, if I ever hear the most over-asked question in interviews, how did you get inspired?
Mm.
Well, yeah, I looked at this and, you know, I like fact. Well, no, you saw someone else. We copy. You said it about we copy.
Yeah,
you copy educators. You go on a course and copy.
Mm.
How are you going to make a point of difference? So rather than this focusing on, I'm going to become a brand ambassador, you ain't going to make money from it.
No.
I would be looking at building a community and then actually how can I? You're doing it. You're doing it.
Yeah.
But actually, how can we do that? And then what value can we get? So I think, you know, and then if you're building that profile, you're going to have to work for free. But there is a reason to my why, to why I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to go along and just run around like headless chick. I did at the start and I had, and probably like the pair of you, you get asked a lot to do stuff. And now I think to myself, can I actually be bothered to do that? Mm. Is there a real purpose for me doing? Am I going to offer something here for somebody? I got asked to interview somebody who was really iconic. And in truth, I just thought, I don't know what I'm going to get. And I know I'll chat to them and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I have to give up a whole Sunday. So you've got to work out what that time and the reason of it.
Yeah. And also I think what's happened, and you know, I don't know whether it was COVID or different elements, but some of the daily rates that people charge, I mean, it's very difficult to, and we get it all the time with maybe brands. They might say, you know, what's your daily rate? It's very, very difficult to, you know, of course we have standard sort of charges, don't we? We all do. But, you know, you don't want to be greedy. You don't want to then look at what other people are charging. But some of the daily rates that individuals charge are just astronomical. It's crazy money. It really is. I think that needs to be looked at, you know, because we all want to make money. Of course, but it's not just about the money. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about community, the three of us. And I think community can mean so many different things. But, you know, whether or not you're a barber, you're a stylist, you're a salon owner, you're a brand. But I think community, if you're a barbershop owner, it's creating that community for your team and your clients. It's so powerful. It's just your story and people buy into that.
But you're seeing, you know, you're saying about being creative. You know, I've seen and spoken to more and more barbers who are doing a kind of monthly direct debit. You know, pay me 50 quid a month, you can get your hair cut two or three That's times. Right. You come in for a little tidy, come and do this. This kind of subscription model, which, you know, really works well for some people. You kind of go, that's a clever little idea. Mm. You know, we've seen... I'm not sure many have made it successfully yet, but I think I've seen the same kind of idea of we'll send you this amount of products through the post every month. You'll get your wax and your thing with a few samples and a few little nice bits, but you subscribe. So we're starting to see that in the kind of, you know, real world, if you like.
Mm.
But I'm still concerned. I see some people are really quite upfront about it. And they're kind of going, look, this is this, subscribe £5 a month and unlock the future.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how successful that's going to be.
But there's no harm in trying, because I think we all have to try things, don't we? And and I think we all make more mistakes than successes. And
but do you think there needs to be do you think you need to have that idea of how you're going to monetize at the beginning? Because I think there's a lot of people starting out going, yeah, I want to do some training. I want to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to start getting my following by showing some of what I'm doing.
So are we talking here industry to industry stuff, aren't we? That's really
where
you're
at.
Because you've got the consumer side.
Yeah, if we say industry at the moment, and you know, I'm quite happy to move into something else.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I certainly see online that there's an awful lot of barbers trying to to make a B2B company that are doing certainly education.
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
are kind of the hard skills of actually cutting. Some are starting to show the soft skills of how to be a barber, and others are trying to show the kind of management and even business skills. You know, some young barbers who feel they're fresher.
Who do your barbers, it's outside of you and your training, who do they look to for training? Who do you go to and you actually think they're going to really teach me something new? Who are they?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think I've seen some of my barbers and spoken to lots of barbers who have done things like I've gone up to Trevor Sorby to do some more razor work as razor work's coming in.
Yeah.
So I think our guys, we tend to look at what we're looking to learn. So if it's cutting, I will tend to always send my guys for most of the training tends to be for longer hair at the moment. Most of my barbers are spectacular with clippers, and
so that probably excites you a little bit.
So
as well.
They'll go back to Sassoons
because it's like anything.
Yeah,
we'll
look for the best people. We'll look for the best solution to the problem.
Yeah, so I look
at
people like Charlie Cullen, Jodie Taylor.
Those
people for me are, and Josh, they're great at adapting to the trends because trends change in barbering. In ladies' hairdressing. So I think it's like if you're going to be educating and looking to make money at it, why is somebody going to come to you? There are so many educators all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And you have your fans and you have your followers, but they're following everybody else. So actually, what is it that's going to make somebody think, I'm going to spend money coming to you, Anthony. I'm going to spend money coming to Phil. I would, if I was going to really throw myself into men's hairdressing, and I am a hairdresser and I do men's hair, and I do, if I was going to go, so I know who I'd go to. And probably those names that I mentioned, because they actually excite me, because I feel they're doing something a little bit different, a bit innovative. They're pushing it forward. It's not what I've been seeing for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, I'm, and there's no disrespect to the skill of fading, it's just a level above, and I can't do it at that. But I'm so bored of seeing it. I'm so bored of seeing balayage, and I'm so bored. What excites me now is that I want to be excited by innovators, people that are looking to where the trends are going, and trends are changing. So if you're going to be educating, rather than trying to be everybody, like what everybody's doing, try and do something a little bit more different.
Yeah, and also I think it's about being relatable, isn't it? Like, to your point, there's so much education, it just feels like it's become kind of flooded. And I think particularly with the barbering industry, it's almost like, you know, you want to relate to that person because you want to be that person. You know, back in the 90s when I was walking around with my Tony and Guy bag, like thinking I was Robbie Williams, you know, you just related to Anthony Muscolo and the team. You wanted to be like that. And I think, you know, TG created this kind of huge thing where you wanted to be part of that brand. You just felt this connection. And I think, you know, that's what, for me, with barbers, they want to relate to the person that's on stage. They want to relate to the person that's doing the education, that's delivering the, and simplistic, to make the education simplistic, because you can overcomplicate haircuts so much. And I think that happens a lot. You know, they take like 15 sections that you could do in two. And that's crazy because it just confuses people.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can see the places that have established themselves. You know, you look at companies that are really rocking it, and, you know, we keep talking about Josh LaMonica, but, you know.
And
you
rightly
know,
so.
But, you know, if you're looking for like a business course, you know, the business courses that they do are phenomenal. And you can see why. You're coming from someone who is, you know, the kind of go-to for business.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's my big fact, and like I say, I send guys for razoring to Sorby, or I teach them for long hair for Sassoons, and I look for people that I feel are at the top of the game for
100%.
It. 100%. Yeah. What I'm interested in is this big set of people that are essentially working for nothing. And if we can find a way for them to shine a light to see how they can monetize it, or where do you get brave to kind of go, I'm not doing that.
Okay, so where are they working free at the moment? Firstly, I would probably say maybe they're doing stage work, maybe they're doing brand work for, maybe do we regard payment as products. We covered that in the last podcast show. Is that payment? Is payment career currency? Mm. You know, that's also saying it doesn't always have to be money. I always remember Noel Colgan in a podcast. He said career currency. Career currency. This is career currency. Mm.
Yeah,
this is this is giving
what's
me
it for me.
Yeah, of course. There's nothing wrong in that. I love sharing, and but I think if there's one bit of advice that I could say to the viewer, to the listener, is what is your thing? Mm. What is it that really gets you excited? Mm. I know what gets me excited in the industry.
Yeah,
and actually, what is that point? And I use it all the time, niching down, right? And I know some people hate the word. Niching down, you know, you could niche down, I think, for a year and really specialize. But for me, niching down makes you become an expert. Saying, and I would look out there and I'd think, where's there a place for me if I'm going to make money? Mm. And the people that I've seen make decent money in the industry are the people that have niched down.
Yeah.
And again, I can relate to, you can relate to Josh. Josh has niched down on his, you know, the way the cuts and Charlie Cullen and Jodie Taylor, Kevin Lutchman. Yeah, they've niched down, but you said about business.
Mm.
You know, who are the people out there who have really niched down in the barbering industry, the real barbering business mind, the business guru, I would look at that. Who's niched down on becoming a barbering content creator expert? Who's going to help you create content creation? Who's niched down on, you know, how to set up a barbering YouTube show? So what I'm trying to say is, if you want to make money, you're going to have to go against so many other people. You've got to do something. Yeah. Rather than being one of thousands, actually nobody really needs you.
No.
Because you're in a safe space. You know how to do that type of haircut or finish. Mm. Actually go and learn something and become a real expert at it. But my biggest advice is that's going to take you a long time. Mm.
Yeah.
You're going to have to go off and invest in yourself.
Yeah.
And also I think with business, it's a really good subject, because when you talk to a lot of barbershop owners, particularly the kind of younger generation, you know, they've learned their craft, they want to open a shop, but they've never been taught how to run a shop. They've never been taught business. No. They don't understand how to read a P&L. They don't understand to make profit. They don't understand how to break, like you do so well. And when I talk to you about business, you just... And I know that comes with experience, but there doesn't seem to be a kind of go-to within the barbering industry to you know, you're going to open a shop. This is how much money you need to take from day one. That's really crucial.
I mean, if I was sitting here and advising you, because we said, you know, why not? I'd have no hesitation of setting up the Noble Barber Business Mind or saying that is of that nature. Right. That people come... And they pay 100%. For your expertise. And this content that you're gathering here, you've got so much content now that you can, you know, say, well, actually, I'm going to hold back a little bit of this and I'm going to put it in there. But your expertise, that's where, and I'm sure you're probably even thinking of that. Mm. Phil with hair and cut. So I think everybody, you know, Phil's does, you know, with his education, but actually, how can I tighten in on it even more?
Yeah.
How can these people doing stage work tighten in? What are you showing on stage that's actually going to make me want to pay you some money?
Yeah. And what makes it different? Because, you know, you can watch 100 fades, you can watch 100 pompadours.
Both of you have said that there's a point to say, that, you know, that where is the career currency? Because I think there's an awful lot of people working for nothing.
Mm.
But that's a career currency.
Without any currency. I mean, I think that the idea is it's going to be currency, but in reality, it's not.
I would ask, are they enjoying it? So do they...
So it's okay to work for nothing, you think?
I think it's okay. For me personally, you have to build up your profile. That is, you've got to get a profile and a skill set that has value. And if it doesn't, am I getting sync back from this? So if I go on stage at Barber Bash, Salon International, HairCon, what am I going to get back? Well, actually, probably I'm not going to get anything, but it's not a bad thing to show your clients, because you can go in and stand behind a chair and, you know, one of your barbers saying, yeah, I was on a Barber Bash. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And suddenly that client's going to think, wow, they're really good because they're on stage. So there's career currency there. So I think it's how you look at it and how you frame it. But I think if you feel that you're just doing it and you're 20 years and you're just thinking, all I'm doing is giving my time, then it's fine.
But, I mean, I think that's really interesting and I really like that a lot of, now I've chatted to a lot of people who have great presence online, but then have their kind of store, and the store doesn't have anywhere near the following that they have. That is that image, is that message getting through to actually to their clients? I've spoken to so many people who do great sets of pictures, and they're building a name in the industry. Yeah. But their clients aren't aware of it. No. Those pictures that they're doing. Yeah, you know, how do you link that message that actually what you're doing it for is for, whether you're doing it for yourself? You know, I started doing the podcast, if I'm honest, I was a bit bored and I really wanted to do something that took me out of my comfort zone. You know, irritatingly, yeah. I wasn't out of my comfort zone. I was just really good at it.
Yeah.
no, but you know, I think that's a really important factor that you've got to have a reason. I definitely, when we set this up, the idea was to find that group of people. I knew they were out there. I knew there were people out there that were feeling like I did at points in my career, vulnerable, worried, and scared. And I felt I had this huge kind of address book and knowledge that I could get rid of that fear for a lot of them.
Yeah.
That was worth it, and that's why we did it. But there are guys sitting at home frantically. I mean, I think there's closing dates have just gone or are about to go for another set of awards.
Yep.
You're sitting there. Everyone's sitting there at their laptop. They're AIing the crap out of it. They're desperately getting
it. So what are you saying?
They've gone into studios. Have we switched topics? Sorry. We've gone into studios and created imagery and all that kind of stuff. And out of that, a handful of people are going to win. And one or two people are going to win. One or so are going to go through it. But all the people that have done all this work, that's still currency. Are they, you know...
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I get that.
What do they do with that? What do they do with that image? What do they do with that experience of doing on stage? What do they do with it? And how do they bring it back into their shops?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of industry awards, and I think there's a lot of benefits to enter the awards, you know. And I think it doesn't always have to be about spending loads and loads of cash on a particular shoot. But again, I think, you know, there is an entry form for the awards, whether or not it's written by yourself, whether or not it's written by APR, or whether or not it's written by Mr. or Mrs. AI. You know, I think AI is huge. We all know it's huge. I think most people are quite scared of AI, and I understand why. But I think, you know, it brings a lot of opportunity to the barbering industry as well. But I think, you know, it's you know, people. I think you've got to look at why you enter awards as an example to the point on the subject of awards. You know, are you entering it because you want to have a shiny award in your barbershop or in your space, or you're doing it because you want it to raise your profile? But I think to Dom's point, you know, you have to build your profile, and categorically, no matter how humble you are, no matter how you start off at the beginning, there gets to a point where, whether or not it's from you or from your other half or whatever, where you think, I do need to try and generate some money from this, because you're giving up all of your time, whether or not it's to do a podcast or to do live interviews or whatever it is, you're putting in all this effort for nothing. You're creating something for everybody else except yourself. And that's where I think that the monetizing of whatever you're doing, I think one of you mentioned it earlier on, you know, you almost sort of think about that before you start doing what you're doing. How can I monetize what I'm going to create? And I think everybody gets to that. You have to, because otherwise you just lose interest and it just doesn't work.
And nobody benefits today. I want to get paid because I'm getting paid at loving what I do. And that I believe is helping people get insights, inspirations, information. Yeah. That's what I love. I love it when people reach out and say, I love what you're doing. Awards, I believe, are absolutely fantastic. And I think competition is fantastic, whether it's an award, competition, because I think it helps test yourself.
Yeah.
It helps test yourself in a way to see actually where I'm at. There's a lot of awards, let's be totally honest. I think if you enter, you're going to become a finalist, and there's a good chance that you win it, because I believe that the entry, and I'm talking there are big awards as well, big awards, that actually the entry numbers are so low that you've got a really good chance of entering. But I don't blame somebody if you win. So you know, like I get to host Salon Awards, which is, let's be honest, there's a lot of familiar faces at those awards.
Yeah.
But actually, who cares for them? good on them. They've took the time. They've not spent a lot of money. They'll go back and say, I won Colourist of the Year for Northumberland, for I'm Colourist of the Year for Surrey. Okay, is it the Oscars? Mm. No.
No.
Does a customer outside there, again, it comes back to that little thing. Customers like my hairdresser, my barber, they're award-winning.
Mm.
They don't care if it's British hairdressing or whatever. And then on the other side, and again, when we were sitting down with some hairdressers and they were from Tony and Guy and they were talking, she was talking to us about awards and she said, I want to enter them into the big awards. And we all know what the expensive award is, the British Hairdressing Awards. You've got Men's Hairdresser of the Year. People see that as an expensive one to enter because, fortunately, to have a real chance, you've got to invest in good models. I know people say you can find models off street, but I think if you have a great model, there's a whole different conversation in that.
Yeah.
But I said, you haven't got, that isn't the holy grail.
No.
That there are so many awards now that actually you could capture a look on your phone and you could create great images now on a phone. Edgy, think about it. And just go out there. If you actually explore every, I bet every brand within the barbering industry, biggest brand, will have an award.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. I mean, I definitely think, you know, competition, you know, in itself, it is, it brings out the edginess. It brings out the different. Mm. And I think when you follow the pack, it just doesn't do the same. You know, we've seen it across, you know, what the Vivids did to social media for a spell. And it was, you know, the originators of those, the ones that were firmly behind it, really got traction. You know, the first lot that were really making it out of Balayage. Everyone got very bored. Everyone moved on. There is always, you know, the power of the mullet arriving and the burst fade and all the different bits. Yet someone's in it at the beginning because they're looking for that niche. They're looking for that competitive edge.
Yeah.
They're looking for it. I completely agree. You know, you've got the biggest awards of hairdressing. You know, you're going to spend thousands and thousands on a set of picture. But equally, you've got the one shot awards, which is take a snap and send it in. So, you know, my bit is always about kind of not winning, but still utilizing that experience.
That's brilliant.
I think a lot of people go, we didn't win. I mean, I loved what you were saying, that do it for a reason. I remember hearing this story, and I have no reason to believe it's not true, so I'll tell it. But Charles Worthington and his business partner were about to launch their product range.
Right.
And it was all set to go, and it was set to kind of explode in the week after British Hairdresser of the Year, and he didn't win it.
Right.
So they packed it up, they stopped it, they waited, they spent the year really working, fine-tuning what went wrong, did it again, he won it, they launched the brand.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I don't know if you've heard that story.
I haven't. I would say it's true. I mean, I'm not.
I mean, I have no doubt that it's true from who it was told to me. But you know, that level of direction of what we're going to do is amazing.
They're saying, really interesting what you said there, if they won the British Hairdressing Award. So for many of us old timers who have seen the awards evolve from its start to where it is now, it's changed a lot in kudos.
Mm.
Right. Mm. That's not taking anything away. If you win British Hairdresser of the Year or a category for a region, brilliant. And it's an achievement. I salute you. But in its very early days, if you won a British Hairdressing Award, you were going to go big.
With
the consumer, you were going to get your products into boots. You were going to go
exactly
on this morning. You were going to become a celebrity hairdresser, celebrity barber. Those days are gone now.
Mm. Yeah.
That isn't there anymore.
No,
you win a British. Why has that become like that? Why has that, has it lost its kudos really to the consumer, to the consumer media? Are they as interested in that anymore?
Well, I don't know if the whole thing's moved on. I mean, I was watching something someone's just put up on Insta, and it's just the most fun, which is when they had a program called The Salon.
Oh, God.
With Paul Merritt.
And I'd worked on that. I knew the production company before, and it went off, and I'd forgotten they did a celebrity period.
Yeah, they did.
Someone's putting up all Steve Strange's haircuts.
Was celebrity scissor hands, was it? He was doing
just terrifying.
That's right,
But really interestingly, it reminded me that actually there was a point where you couldn't throw a shoe without hitting a hairdresser on TV. There were makeover shows. Yeah.
This is another conversation.
There was a huge amount of
this is part three
of TV. There was just so much of it.
Yeah.
And then it kind of got overseen. I think maybe kind of interior design took over a bit more.
Your cookery.
And now cookery. And you know, and then and we see sewing on now and pottery on and all this kind of stuff.
Well, they tried it, didn't they, recently? But, we had the what was it? There was a like a one of these pottery ones that came on. What was it called?
The Great
Blowout.
British.
Oh, my
yes.
Blowout.
Yeah.
Came on. It didn't get its traction.
No,
because,
that's right.
Because our viewing habits have changed now. So,
That end goal is
And this is, I think, really interesting. As a collective industry, if we're gonna really raise our presence to the consumer, because we all, if we're passionate in the industry, we're all talking between ourselves anyway. I don't think that's the issue. I don't think we're translating our industry, hair industry, men's, ladies, whatever you want it to be, to the consumer. That's how things are going to change. I think we have to have a better profile within that. Now, if brands were to collectively come together, and the salon was brilliant.
Amazing.
But they won't bring it back. They were talking about it, but it's incredibly expensive, I think, from the production point of view. And also, you won't get the viewing figures. But I think, are we not just missing something where, dream it, but surely as an industry, between a selection of brands, thinkers, people like Luke, who's got his podcast, and create it.
Yeah.
What stops us creating something that actually we take ownership of again? Because I'm so embarrassed sometimes of programs that just put out the same kind of narrative of our industry, the same, you need the characters, you need, but sometimes it's like you're watching college hair competition, but the salon saw a massive traction of young people going into
that
the
was
hair
a bit,
industry.
Yeah. I mean, the energy that came from that was,
but that was phenomenal. All built on the success of those British Hairdressing Awards because we had celebrity hairdressers. Isn't it time? I think the barbering industry has actually done it better. I think the barbering industry has created a bit more culture and a bit more a subculture. And I think that's really cool. I think the hair industry has really got left. I think it's catching up again. But actually there was, it pulled, I think it's pulled more people into barbering. You know?
Well, I think that's been the really interesting bit is, you know, I do think barbering's much cooler. And I think there was a point that barbering spent a long time being, you know, I think Johnny Barber always called it the cousin you'd invite to the birthday but not to the wedding, and I think we were seen as the kind of poor relative of hairdressing.
I think it's got to be careful now how it's managing itself.
I think
barbering again,
has switched over. Yeah,
because barbering was built on that heritage, wasn't it? Yeah. You had that heritage period. Yeah, suddenly you know Peaky Blinders, the cat and tats and that. It became cool. I mean, the word barbering was the most uncool word.
Oh, God,
yeah.
And suddenly, now I think we're moving into another period.
Yeah. Mm.
And also because of all the negative noise of cash laundering and, you know, I mean, that's what all I hear from my clients now.
Yeah.
I know the barbering industry is full of incredible talent and a culture that has just set the way. But I think it's a bit like when things peak, and I think it's peaked.
Yeah.
What's it going to do next? Mm. How's it going to move? How's it going to... I think it's in a fragile place, I think, going forward.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's definitely the conversation I have with barbers, with barbershop owners, and even with some barbershop, you know, barber product brands that are working out what happens.
So it's making sure that you create the you're in charge of your industry.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's I guess probably where I was.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, hairdressing, I guess, became more sophisticated at one stage of, you know, the way their shows were, the way the magazines ran.
Yeah.
You know, it had a spell probably 30 odd years ago where it got polished.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I go back to hairdressing in the 80s where it really wasn't. It was great fun. I loved it, but it kind of polished up in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
And barbering certainly has done that. You know, hairdressing really went through the competition, the level of competition improved. We're certainly seeing now, barbershop and barbering competitions are incredible now.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of those things are really at a really good peak. You know, hairdressing has certainly been dominated by PR companies for a long time. You know, from barbers, some are. Is that something? What's your experiences with PR companies? Do you think as a barber that's something that you need to have as a brand that's going to grow, or can you do it without?
I think it's a really good question. I think there's a place for PR. There's a place for having a PR kind of person or a PR company looking after your PR. However, I think that from past experience, I think it's about connections. It's about contacts. It's about, and I think us three kind of, we live that. We live that every day because of the people that we know and how long we've been in the industry. But I think that a lot of it you can do yourself. You know, if you have a collection and you send it to your PR to send to all of the trade mags, whatever, you could do that yourself. You know, you could send your collection to America. I'm not saying you're going to necessarily get the same result because I think there is a political kind of issue sometimes with things like that. But I think a lot of the PR is down to you because you know how to PR yourself because you're you. You know your brand better than anybody. And I think when you work with a PR, there's a tendency that it could be diluted with your messaging and how you want to be portrayed and how you want to come across in the barbering industry. And I think, you know, I mean, I'm 50 now, but I was talking to a friend over the weekend about, you know, the 90s, being in the industry in the 90s. It was fucking cool. It was really, everybody wanted to be a barber or everybody wanted to be a hairdresser. You know, it's the best industry in the world. Mm. It's not just about working in a barbershop, doing fades. There's so much, and I think you two epitomise that. There's so much that you've achieved in your careers with more to come. But, you know, we started off as a hairdresser or we started off as a barber, and I think the opportunities within the industry completely get, they don't get realised. I think they just get not pushed under the carpet, but it's almost like you're afraid to talk about your successes. It's mad.
Love that, Phil. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, salute that completely. PR, though, I will say, is goes back to awards. Awards are PR, aren't they? And again, you've got to separate industry, consumer. If you're looking from a business point of view, it's no point having an industry PR who's going to get your word out to the industry. You need a PR who's going to specialise on consumer press. Yeah. So if, you know, your groups of barbershops, okay, if I'm doing something that needs to be for industry professionals, I'd be looking at, okay, do I get an industry professional? Yeah. I don't think you need a PR. It's no point just having a PR for the sake of having a PR because, one, they're extremely expensive. But I think if you've got create the Noble Barber podcast community and you want to sell that, I would certainly be thinking about a PR because there is a reason that PR will do it, and they will have the connections. And you know, we talk about magazine. That's only a small bit now of it. If I'm a PR, or if you're thinking of doing PR, you want to be thinking about getting on podcasts. You want to think about getting on lives, getting involved in community lives, getting involved in events. So it's a big reason, but actually, there has to be a reason. You need to get a return on investment on your PR. You can do it yourself. And there is a PR who gives PR training. And, you know, but I think the PRs will have the contacts.
Inside
the industry that could help you and could help yourself. But if I'm thinking I want to get to the consumer, and I think, right, okay, well, who do I need to contact? Radio shows. There's podcasts that are consumer friendly. So that's probably the biggest.
I mean,
advice.
I guess it comes back to that whole, you know, from what we've said right from the beginning of these conversations in the first half as well. It does come back to having that plan.
Yeah.
You know, why are you doing something? I think why? You know, I think it's very easy, you know, when someone's in an industry that's kind of, you know, throwing paint at the wall.
Yeah.
It's very easy to get some on you.
Yeah.
It's whether you want to go down that route. And I guess that's the bit that you need to kind of go, right, this is why I'm doing it, this is what I'm doing it for, and this is who I want to talk to.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, there's a tendency, and I do it every day, but there's a tendency to kind of look about what everybody else is doing. And you almost become obsessed with their account or what brand they're
working. That's right,
when actually, it's just about you and what you're doing. And you know, social media is amazing and we live it, but it's also very, very, very dangerous, malicious place sometimes. And I think a lot of the time it's just about what you're doing, what your brand doing is, and worrying about your own community. You know, people say to me often, oh, what's that community doing? Or what are they doing? Or how many members? I don't give a shit how many members they've got. They're not relevant to me because there's so many amazing communities out there. There's room for everyone. I just think sometimes we worry about other people and not worry about what we're doing, which is mad. Mm.
And at the end of the day, if you're authentic about it, you will stand the test of time.
And that's
the reality of it. Yeah. People will see through it and they'll just think, this is just... And people will burn out. And that's quite often...
I think that's interesting. Authenticity is definitely... it was called the Noble Barber for the specific reason that we wanted to disband bullshit and be very clear and upfront. And so we've managed to get everyone to be honest and transparent. I think the factor of this is what I'm about and what I'm selling is the core value of us. And I think that's exactly what you two are saying. You know, there's no point in looking over the fence at what next door are doing because they're not you. You know, you can't be somebody else.
I've heard this on competition and, you know, you shouldn't be looking in. But I think you need to be aware.
I think you need to be aware
because, you know, you might be getting left behind. I'm always aware. I do make it my time, but I don't become obsessed. And I've got to be honest, and I think probably like Phil and probably like yourself, I'm not excited by copying.
No.
Actually, copying if someone's doing something, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to look at how can I do something that will be different? I'm not saying I'm successful at it, but that's actually what drives me on. That's what gets me excited still is that achievement. And that achievement comes from doing something. We've done a podcast. But now for me, it's like, what can I now do different? And I feel like that's all I would say to a lot of people. We're a world full of followers, a world full of sheep. We mentioned Anthony Muscolo and pioneers, Lee Stafford in the hair industry, Josh LaMonica, Johnny Barber.
Yeah.
These were people who were ahead of the curve. You weren't copying. No. You done barbering, not because it's a fashionable thing to do. You done it because... that excited you. Let's be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
And
that's why it's changed. I think, you know, I think I get bored. I think my problem is I get bored very quickly. I had big salons. I now have small stores.
Pivoting.
You know, I've done all these things. I do it when I really feel the urge. And I think, you know, listening to your gut and what excites 100%. You and what fires up your passion.
Yeah.
Is always the textbook I go back to kind of go, right.
I'm in complete admiration. I never feel jealousy. I feel competitive. I won't ever lie. I have a competitive side of me, but that drives me on. Mm. That's what makes me want to do. And again, you know, whatever you're filled in, you need to have that. I wake up every day, not because I'm driven by money. I want the money to be able to support what I do.
Yeah.
So I can do
to have that freedom.
I'm still as excited and passionate as I was probably at 16 in where I'm at. And every day I'm excited when I go out of here. Right, what is there an email? Is there a message? Is there somebody who's got in touch? That's what drives me on. Mm. And that's all I would say to that listener, that viewer.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Yeah, and also I think it is about being honest and it is about being authentic and it's not about saying what you want people to hear. You know, it's not about being controversial because I think you have to speak the truth and you have to tell it how it is. And I know that's difficult sometimes. And sometimes I have a reputation for kind of like, you know, maybe being too truthful, but I don't even know what that means. How can you be too truthful? If somebody asks you a question, you should answer that question with your knowledge and your giving the right answer rather than answering a question to say what people want to hear.
I always think it's important in that as well, though. If you're going to do that, you've got to have them sat there as well. I think that people need... Yeah. Because I think, look, there are conversations in our industry that need answering. But there's no point us sitting here and having a rant about something that gets my back up and because I haven't got an opportunity to actually defend their case, because sometimes you look in and I might have read it completely wrong. Mm. And sometimes maybe that we moved into St. Kilda, but we need to have that bigger conversation that actually I may have put somebody's nose out of joint. Mm. I may not, but if they're going to have slag you off, you may have.
I mean,
I'd hate to watch it and think, well, actually, I've got no way to defend my point.
And I think that's, I mean, you know, we had a spell of, certainly with training, not wishing to open that can back up again. And, you know, we had City and Guilds come in who were really open. You know, it was a really good conversation. I wasn't quite sure how that was going to go, but we managed to keep that really honest and really frank, because we brought them in and speak to them. So we're always open here. If there's someone we want to bring on, I'm very happy. I'm always keen to have people invited on. If there's anyone you feel we should, let us know. Say their name and they'll hopefully see it and come and join us. But, you know, I think the right to reply is really important. And like I say, the reason for you two is, you know, you've got this wealth of experience. You know, this is where we're at.
I know we're sort of going in, but there was a podcast that we'd done some years back. And it became a war of words, not from me, but my lack of experience, actually. And a very well-known hairdresser. Basically, one hairdresser had obviously got an issue with another hairdresser. Mm. I won't name, because, again, they're not here to defend.
Right. Go on.
No, I can't, because I'll probably get that phone call again if they saw or heard it.
Right.
Very well-known.
Okay.
Award. And this hairdresser had obviously got a bit of problem and they really slagged off this particular person that they worked alongside in this sort of Then the other person, I thought, well, let's bring them on because they were interesting. You'll just have to go back and have a listen. And they came on and they defended their place, and they had something to say about this person. Yeah. Well, the person that got the conversation phoned me up whilst I was on holiday in Gran Canaria.
Right.
Literally, was very threatening in, you know, if we didn't alter this, you know, from a legal point of view, my life, I'm panicking. I'm going, you know, you've got to take this down, edit this out. And I'm thinking, well, actually, you've just gone and slated this person.
Yeah.
And this person's come back and, but they didn't like it.
Right.
So what would have been better was for them both to have sat there.
Yeah.
And actually, you could have controlled that conversation more. Yeah. But it just goes, it shows you things can get out of hand very quickly. And an insurance company, word of advice for you as well is, who say, and you, we're in the media landscape. You could say the wrong thing before you know it. You could be in some serious bother.
Yeah. And also, I think, you know, there's a tendency for people not to necessarily speak their mind sometimes in our industry, because they're afraid of what that could potentially bring to them or their brand. And that's, you know, that's a shame, because
I think what would be nice is that we do a podcast live show and actually and bring people in and have an audience and then have a real healthy debate and then actually bring people in, you know, the big debate.
I love that idea.
I think with the big debate looming, it's probably time to finish this episode before I find myself signed up to more free work, traipsing around the country for a big debate. Keep tuning in. We will, I'm sure, continue this conversation.
Yeah.
And we'll be back to you. I think the whole point of today's really astounded me in the fact that us boys who all have been doing this 30 or 40 years, we've got a great passion and energy for it. That's the really exciting thing about our industry. I'm not sure 35 years in banking leaves you in the same
because they're all retired.
Excitement. Maybe it is that we're still working. But I think I've come to the point at the end of a podcast I always do that, you know, that it's a great industry to be in, and we're very lucky. Dom, thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you for inviting us.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
As always.
Congratulations, man.
I'm Anthony Laban, and we've been The Noble Barber. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.